You are very welcome to Cawley's Call with me, Alan Cawley, powered by Benetti Menswear, a topical debate show covering all things Irish football, along with 1v1 interviews with top-class sports stars from a wide range of different sports.
It's me that's putting on the green jersey, me that's going to take flak from people to say, you're not even Irish. I was big enough to say, I'm going to take it.
There's many people I've spoke to, they always say, I used to put money on you scoring the first goal, but I've never seen any of that money, though.
And Andy, he says, I want the performances that I got from you in Scotland with you under 16s, not that rubbish that you gave me over in Oslo.
Hi everyone, and you're very welcome back to Series 3, Episode 12 of Cawley's Call. Delighted to have you as usual. And as I promised about 3 or 4 weeks ago, we will have a guest every week from now on. So we're carrying on that trend, Stu, even though Stewie wants to get stuck into talking about himself on the telly on Friday night, but we'll come back to that. But just in terms of the guest that we have this week is none other than former teammate and manager of UCD, Andy Myler. Andy, good to see you.
Good for you to have me, Al. You're scraping the barrel after 3
No. I'm very selective with the guests, Andy. It's only the big hitters we get
in here.
And no better time to get you in coming off the back of your first win of the season
absolutely.
Obviously, Friday. We will delve into, I suppose, the season and that win on Friday night as well. But just in terms of yourself, as I said, Stewie would have played against you. I would have played with you. You had a great career here in the League of Ireland. But in terms of the management side, going from winning the first division now into the Premier, just how enjoyable has the time been, I suppose, or is it at the moment with UCD?
Yeah, listen, it's really enjoyable. It's a really good club, UCD. You spent some time there, and Stu would have seen.
That's why he brought John. He wanted to ask him about his time.
Exactly. Yeah. He was really good at UCD. But
I should have retired after UCD.
But listen, it's a great club. Really unique club, and hasn't changed since my time or your time there playing over the years. There's some aspects to it that are exactly the same in terms of the focus on player development, the focus on moving guys on to a better thing after UCD. All of those kind of things are exactly the same, so that ethos remains. Listen, managing is the next best thing to playing. You know, it doesn't replace it, doesn't anything else, but it keeps that interest in it that you have, the love for the game you have. That coaching aspect that, you know, get you back on the pitch, all of those kind of things. So it's the next best thing. It's never going to replace, but hugely enjoyable from the point of view of the club I'm at and the group of players that I have to work with. Fantastic group of young men. So, yeah, really enjoying it.
I was just going to say, like, management being the next best thing to a player, right? I would say, or I'd suggest this.
Surely punditry is the next best thing.
No, well, Eamon Dunphy was right when he said punditry is the graveyard of football. It is. No, it is.
Really?
Yeah.
We're interviewing Andy, not you. Come on.
No, but it is. So what I was going to say to you is, if you're that way inclined, I would have thought, like, you know, because I don't think a lot of players, well, I suggest about 99% of players probably couldn't go into management, because I don't think they'd have the mental capacity to deal with all the things you have to deal with, like, you know. And would that be correct? I mean, it is. I mean, surely there's so much more to deal with. When you're a player, it's tunnel vision, one thing, but obviously when you're in management, it's everything and anything.
I'm thinking of the WhatsApp groups that light up when I say that 95% of my former teammates hadn't got the mental capacity to do, to do something I'm doing. But I know what you mean. I know what you mean in terms of the I suppose some of it is just people who are still involved, be punditry or not, Stewie, just mad into football.
Mad into football.
And we probably played with guys over the year that liked football, didn't fall in love with it and all of those kind of things. So I think, like, from my point of view, in terms of, I never saw myself as a punter or anything like that, but I loved it enough to be interested in that side of the game, the coaching aspect and the management aspect. I'm interested in management almost generally from as a concept apart from anything else.
Okay.
The coaching aspect and the football thing allows you to marry those two things. So you get you working with people, and if you like to work with people every day and combine it with a thing that you really like doing, i.e. football, it's brilliant for that.
It's interesting now, because we would have spoken a lot on the show, and it often comes up about former teammates, Andy, and I'd often say to Stu, he was nailed on to be a manager, and you know what I mean, former teammates as you, and you'd look and say, and then there's
I would say that about Stewie as an opponent, even in terms of when you would have looked at him playing, you would have said he'd land
management
up
coach material.
Management, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, coming to yourself, obviously I would have shared dressing rooms with you, and you always had that, I suppose, maturity, because you maybe might have been a senior pro in the dressing room, but also a kind of wise head as well on you in terms of dealing with younger lads around, or whatever the case may be, whatever issues may arise. So I would have always, it doesn't surprise me that you've gone into management, should I say. So going from, I suppose, the successful season with UCD last year, obviously the jump up to a more difficult time, if you like, and I want to go into that in terms of just to give people an insight how difficult and how big the jump is, because sometimes I don't think people realise going from the First Division to the Premier just how big of a jump it is. So going from where, I suppose, you have younger lads, so you don't have senior pros as such in your dressing room, all younger lads, you spoke there about player development, you get into a habit of winning nearly every week, that becomes a habit, challenging obviously to win the league, but then you go to a season where Friday after 15 games it's only your first victory.
Yeah.
How challenging can that be, that transition?
It was massive, like, and to be honest, I'll be perfectly honest about it, it surprised me to jump this year in terms of, as a player, I was lucky enough to get, I was promoted right at the start of my career with UCD into the Premier and then promoted at the end with Rovers into the Premier. And the transition
wasn't as big.
Right.
Interesting.
The transition now was actually fairly seismic. And in terms of, surprised me in one way. I remember going to see Finn Harps at the end of last year, the team that finished, I think they finished second or third last. They were a serious team. And I remember looking at them thinking, we're not going to beat these if we get these in the playoff. Because they were a really, really good team with really, really good players in it. And I was thinking, Jesus, the level has gone up here. And even over the last couple of weeks, having played this four series of games, you think like, win, you know, we sort of get used to win, it'll come. It's actually really, really hard to get the win because the teams are of a serious standard. The tactical setup of the teams is of a serious standard now. The top three teams in the league have coaches that are doing things that are, you know, as good as you'll see anywhere else in terms of what they're doing tactically and stuff like that. So it's a really big jump, and I'd be lying if I said it didn't surprise me, because I sort of expected it as to be like, well, I know there's a jump, but I've dealt with that before as a player. But actually, as a player now, it's a much bigger jump for our lads to get, and especially when you have a group of just young players, I suppose.
Yeah, and that's the thing as well that probably makes the jump a little bit bigger. So for the likes of the players that you're dealing with, Andy, and younger lads and students and going to college and all that, not only is it the resources you're dealing with, but just in terms of the landscape for UCD, say, what would a working week be for you or the lads? Because we often hear the debate around part-time clubs to full-time clubs, but the UCD thing is unique in itself.
Yeah, we try and match it as much as we can, the full-time thing. So our basic schedule is we're in on Monday. The guys will be in the gym tonight and Tuesday. We'll be in on Wednesday. We'll be in on Thursday morning. We'll play on Friday and we'll be in on Saturday. We'll take Sunday off. So that's pretty much it. So we may be missing maybe one session there.
And is that all in the evening?
Thursday
morning, yeah. So some of it's in the evening, some of it's in the morning. Okay. When the summers come in and the guys are finished college, we typically move to all mornings.
Okay.
So we train at 8 o'clock in the morning. And that's typically because lads are working on summer camps, working on all kind of stuff, and you don't want to do training after 20 lads have been working on a summer camp all day. So we actually train in the morning while they're fresh. So that's sort of our schedule as we go through. So we're probably missing maybe one pitch session as opposed to what a full-time club would do. The guys have access, you know yourself, facilities out in UCD, have unbelievable access to gyms and stuff like that. So that's not a gap in what we have. But it's probably access to the to time on the pitch with some of the players at some times. And then the other part of what full-time and part-time misses is rest. That's what it misses. It misses the ability for people to take a rest. It certainly challenges, like in terms of the Premier and the First Division, it challenges myself and Willie and Jer from the point of view of our time to put into prep, to put into our video analysis, to put into all of those bits. You do it, you try and do your best you can, but you're up late in the day, early mornings, all that kind of stuff to try and get that stuff in. And it's a challenge. And then like resources and everything else come into it in terms of where, like I think we have fantastic facilities, that's one thing, but we're not terrifically funded by the university or anything like that.
Okay.
You know, it's all a self-funded thing. Those scholarships have to come from somewhere. You know, there's people that are throwing a few bob into the club from all over the place, ex-players, some businesses, all that kind of stuff. So that churn is like any other League of Ireland club from that point of view. So
Which can be very difficult.
100%. Like every League of Ireland club, as we know, is more or less living hand to mouth. So from that end of things, you know, it's a yearly cycle of getting that money into the club. So we have fantastic facilities, we have all those things, but we have the same problems that every other League of Ireland club has on the other side of that. So but that's roughly what we're at. We're trying, I suppose, we're kicking on things like, you know, our GPS, our food stuff, all of that kind of stuff. We're always trying to just push the boat out, get the next best thing, all of those kind of things, keep step pace with that type of thing. And we've done it okay so far, but it's like I say, full-time football and more professional football and funded more. You know, the top two clubs are reasonably well funded now as well. Mm. It's difficult to step pace with that for everybody, but all you can do is your best, put the work in and see where it gets you.
How does the scholarship fund work? I've often wondered this. I mean, is it a yearly thing or is it for their term in the college, or that it's a 4-year stint, or what way does it work?
Typically, you know, contracts work on a yearly thing, but I think the promise with the club is that if we take you in on scholarship, we'll see you through.
Right.
If you know what I mean, we'll try and see you through the 4 years. Now, some guys will come in, will work and won't work for different reasons. They may end up, one or two guys may end up, you know, dropping down to the Leinster senior team for a year and coming back. And actually, lads have done quite well. Actually, from doing that.
So UCD have a Leinster senior?
We have a Leinster senior team.
Okay,
as well.
Then, no, okay.
And honestly, I'd use the Leinster senior set up more for player development if I could. But okay, it's actually when you drop them into Leinster senior, you can't get them back for 6 months, 12 months. It's not like
the 19s. So do you use that as a kind of reserve team?
Yeah, there's guys like, so even the likes of Darragh Keane, Harvey O'Brien, Lorcan Healy, the goalkeeper, they've all actually started in the Leinster senior setup and come into the first team setup. So you get lads who've either not come through, you know, not come through an elite pathway or whatever else like that, and it's slightly late developers. They'll start off there. And it's like Sunday Leinster senior, it's a decent standard. It's probably a more realistic standard than under 19s football.
It's great preparation
like
for senior football. Unbelievable. It's very physical, yeah.
And I'd only, like, if it's given my way, I'd play all our young lads in the Leinster senior every Sunday if I could.
Rather than the under 19s?
Rather than the under 19s.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because it's just a different type of development. It's men's football. All of that kind of stuff.
See, that's the debate, and I don't want to go off on a tangent, but now that you bring it up, Andy, that is the debate around the national leagues, that when it stops at 19s and then the gap in between is such. So if you have a squad of 20, 23, 4, whatever, there's lads then, if they're not viewed as good enough from the under 19s to step up to a first team, whatever the club be at, they're kind of left in limbo.
Yeah.
So do you definitely feel, I know you, obviously in your case you have the Leinster senior team to drop lads down, but for other clubs, is it calling out for a reserve kind of type league or an under 23 type league for the likes of that scenario for lads?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always amazed with why they put an age stipulation on this stuff. Because, look, if a club, and most clubs, in fairness, who have anything about them, will not fill their reserve team with 28-year-old fellas.
Mm. Yeah. If,
you know, they'll fill them with 18 or 19 and there'll be gaps for one or two. But we have a set of, like, really arbitrary rules that govern the 19s stuff. Like, I can't play anybody in the 19s team for the last 3 weeks that aren't under 19 because it's the cup competition. That's just the way that has to be. But like that as well, like, you can play two players who are overage, two players who are just 20. It's mad. It's like, why? I don't know the reasoning for any of those things. So that's why I would look at the Leinster senior and saying, I could play lads who aren't in my team in that team and they get really good football every week.
So it's just funny as you mentioned that, like, why, I just wonder, why are we so rigid when it comes to rule changes? Like, you know, why can't we adopt a system like Formula One whereby they literally just, if something doesn't work, they change the rules.
Chop and change.
If it doesn't work, they'll change it back. And, you know.
Well, especially with the likes of your club, I would feel, Andy, where player development is now I know people will argue at different clubs, but everybody has different targets as such.
Yeah.
Shamrock Rovers are there to win the league. They're bringing through lads in academy, but your main focus, I would have thought, is obviously player development, and that's what we've seen with UCD over the years, and that's not to take away from any other clubs. I know you're all developing players before you start roaring and shouting at me. But just in terms of yourselves at UCD, there has to be that, I would feel, flexibility towards, like, lads pathways through 19s and then overage lads that can drop up and down, flexibility amongst the rules, as Stewie said.
Absolutely. I mean, I would imagine all clubs are actually not dissimilar to us in any way for that level of football. For guys who they're trying to get into their first team, you need that level of flexibility. I think over the last couple of years, we haven't even given the underage football enough games. Like, games are the most important thing in any young player's development, in terms of you can train as much as you want, but you need to play games and you need to play meaningful games. You don't need to play, you know, if you go and watch a lot of underage football now, this is just my own taking it, you'll get 4-3-3s against 4-3-3s and teams play out from the back and it's relatively unopposed and all of that kind of
false
stuff.
Football.
Yeah. Exactly. And then you play on a Friday night and it's like getting a punch in the face because you've never actually played that type of football before. Mm. So
Jack Bourne made this point. I remember listening to him on Off the Ball probably about a month or two ago. He was on the panel on Saturday and he said exactly that. Like, you know, he said the biggest problem when you're coming through it, you know, especially the younger age lads, you know, and these are the real quality players. Like, you know, when we all know who the players are, that, you know, the quality players are underage level. Like, no, and I get it, some players develop for others, but they need to be playing in really competitive games. Otherwise, they don't.
Against
they
players
don't develop,
of a similar standard.
They just don't develop. Yeah, yeah. And then they hit this plateau between 15 and 19, like where you know, this could be 3 or 4 years where they're just not developing the way they should, and then they've lost that time, you know.
Absolutely, and even in terms of how, I mean, it happens less now than it used to, but you know, the development of, we've all played in DDSL leagues and over the years, whatever else, so that's where you have this really successful team that beats everybody. Mm. Yeah. And actually, then you get to senior football and nobody beats everybody. Mm. And yeah, it's actually difficult for those to transition into competitive football then. So
speaking of beating everyone, that was just the case last year, Andy, and yeah, brings us nicely on to the Premier Division. Sorry, I had to throw that in. But just, I suppose, we mentioned here about other clubs, and as I said, UCD has its knockers, right? I would always defend UCD because it was the first place that I had got me opportunity to play first team men's football, as you said, and go on then to maybe have a carve out a little career for yourself if you want. So when you think of the players that have come through UCD, it's phenomenal, really, if you were to go around the leagues. So I would always have a place for UCD. Just for the likes of yourself, though, after winning the first division, or sorry, getting promoted and coming up, and then obviously you're in the Premier now, for you as a manager, we spoke there about player development. What is your remit at the start of the year? Is it just to keep them in the division, or are you challenging to be mid-table, or what are you aspiring to be, kind of thing?
In fairness to the club, they don't even give me that remit, Al, in terms of you have to stay in the division, or you have to do this, you have to do that. I think, like, when you look at a football team and you look at a group of players and stuff like that, I think, and if you've seen that group of players enough, you by and large know if there's enough. If somebody's getting enough out of a group for it to be successful, there's still a remit of player development. Players have to improve, players have to move on, all that kind of stuff.
Is that the number one thing, player development at UCD?
Absolutely, okay. Absolutely. It's the same as the ethos of the university from that point of view, in terms of it's people development, you know, putting people out into the world who are good human beings and all that kind of stuff. So it's no different than the football team. So we need to be seen to be developing the players that come to the football club. Like I say, I think the pressure the club will put on is that, like, when you see a group of players or you see individual players and stuff like that, you should see improvements, you should see some of them kicking on. But from the point of view of, they're very realistic about what happens in the first division and what happens in the Premier Division. They've seen it up close a number of times. Mm. They know, in terms of the dynamic of me going out at the start of the year and saying I need a left full or a right full or a centre forward or whatever else, that doesn't happen. Because it's just, you're left to the vagaries of the scholarship system in some regard. And same will happen in January now, where guys are finished degrees and will move on and stuff like that. And it will weaken the squad in certain areas that I won't just be able to plug someone in. I'll have a young lad who will come in, who will be on a learning curve or whatever else like that. But it will be fantastic for the young lad. But in any other club in the country, you would say, you probably have to wait a little bit and I'm going to get a more experienced player here. But that's...
You totally understand that kind of setup.
100%.
And that ability in the past, Andy, to bring in a player. I know it's ages ago, but Derek Swan went into UCD, but I remember other players.
Jay went in late.
Is that still a possibility? Obviously, funding is a problem there, or does that upset the apple cart a little bit when you?
The club have gone with a model of students first and young lads first, right? Now, I think. The club are also open enough to discuss in terms of what happens. Like, if we probably need a grizzly 30-year-old in our side.
Well, let me throw one at you. What if you wanted somebody who wants to go back as a mature student?
Oh, like, no problem.
And like somebody that was still in their prime, like 29, 30.
No problem.
I mean,
in terms of, like, Sam Todd plays centre half for us, probably a good example or a starting example of this was, I think Sam joined us when he was 22, so he'd probably be about 26 when he leaves.
Yeah, okay.
And he's been absolutely unbelievable for us in the first division, and he's unbelievable for us again this year, because he's just that, he's had 100 games at Harps, he's come in, so he makes a massive difference to us. But even last year, like, actually, you're starting to see in the league as well, of guys who are thinking slightly longer term. There was contact last year from a guy, I won't name names or anything like that, but was a well-established Premier Division player, 28 years of age, thinking about going back to college and stuff like that. Had done the other bits, you know, bounced around full-time football, whatever, thinking, listen, I'm not going to earn enough to retire here anyway, I better sort myself out after here. But UCD would allow you to do that, in terms of you'd study, live there, do whatever you need to do. And, like, hopefully the money differential isn't so big with scholarships and everything else when you factor everything in. So
I'm surprised this isn't more of a thing.
Mm. Yeah,
this has
so what
to
happened
be-
with that boy?
I'm trying to say it without saying it, but
he wanted a grand a week.
Exactly, yeah.
He's with Shamrock Rovers.
Everyone wants a grand a week.
He scored two on Friday, he was a manager. So he said, look, in fairness, the club he was at were doing well, Europe, all that kind of stuff. And he said, you know what, I might take another year of that, whatever, which is absolutely fine as well. But it was, I've known from other conversations I'm having over the time as well, that people are starting to think a little bit more like that. And it always dawned on me, I know you're a guy who went back, whatever else, education, all that kind of stuff. I'd be the same from the point of view of that light switch going off a little bit earlier in careers over here. Like, you know,
this has to be a huge thing for you. I mean, something that you guys can really, really, really plug into, you know, if I think that time is coming very quickly.
Yeah.
So on the one then, we're on about player development, Andy, and of course, the news just broke about probably your star player, arguably, Liam Kerrigan is another one, obviously two of the high profile ones at the moment involved with the Irish under-21s and all. So how damaging, I suppose, you get your first victory on Friday night, the boys are probably buzzing, but Colin Whelan we're speaking about, comes off injured, and unfortunately the news breaks that it's as bad as first feared on Friday night. So he must be devastated as well, is he?
I met him for coffee a couple of hours ago there because he just got the news last night and stuff like that. So yeah, absolutely devastated, and we're devastated for him. We're not feeling too much disappointment for ourselves. We only feel disappointment for him. Mm. There's an under-21 camp coming up with 3 games in it where he could qualify for the Euros. There's probably a move for Colly in the summer where he's some great options lined up. So as I was chatting to his dad last night, he said there's not a good time to get injured, but there is a bad one.
It is
a bad one for Colly. So listen, we have to rally around him now. We have to make sure that he gets his rehab in. Cruciates are not what cruciates used to be. They're not the type of thing where you come back a yard slower or whatever like that. You know, they've perfected to the point of view where you can come back the same player. And it's not only UCD. I'm honestly like a massive fan of the two boys, but like any team in this league, and I'm saying from Rovers, anybody else, take Colly Whelan over, he weakens it.
He's that good.
He's absolutely fantastic young player. So we're just like focused now on getting him back right, getting him back to where at least to where he was, if not better. And he's a good lad. He's you know, really grounded young fella with a great family and stuff like that. So they'll all get around him and he'll be grand, but it's just one of those things where the time is.
We wish him all the best. What's the recovery time now on a cruciate? Would it be 6 months?
Yeah, still 6 to 9 months. You know that type of way. So dependent. So you're hoping the lower end of that. You know.
Yeah.
It was fairly common knowledge, Andy. You mentioned it there that there was obviously a lot of suitors coming after him for his performances in the first division and obviously in the Premier Division with the 21s. You were under no illusions that you were probably going to lose him anyway. Obviously, you didn't want him to get injured, the lad, but you were under no illusions that himself and Liam may go in the coming weeks.
No, we were well aware, but we've been chatting to the lads for like since the start of the season in terms of where we would have sat down with them last year and said, right, listen, yous are coming into the last year of your programme. Yous are going to graduate in the summer. Yous are both doing very well. Yous need to start thinking about what's next, options, all of that kind of stuff. Because like I say, it'll seem weird that we'd be pushing our two best players out the door, but actually the importance of that is that we've had Liam and we've had Colly and they've improved to a level where actually they need to go to the next level. Mm-hmm. They don't need to stay at UCD. They need to actually kick on.
And they have their education behind them.
And they have their
most
education. Like, so Liam has finished his commerce degree. Colly's finished his urban planning. So off they go into the world with that in their back pocket and knowing that if the football thing doesn't work out, you know, they're sorted in that regard.
I think, well, from knowing you, obviously, and the one thing with the UCD fellas I always find over the years, and it's no disrespect to anyone involved in other clubs, but obviously the lads are well educated as well, and they have that sense of realism about them, and Colin will be aware, look, it's a bad injury, but when he gets over it and hopefully he recovers lame the same, obviously we'll look to kick on as well. But from your conversations with the players, it seems to me, and from knowing you, you're encouraging their growth as people and to move on and to better themselves with higher profile clubs maybe. There was a manager at UCD with me and and the conversations would be, you're not signing with them. But no, I'm joking about that. But just just in terms of Liam as well, because I would have known Liam as a young lad growing up at Sligo, and I've seen him playing with the 21s and I've seen his development with yourselves, and honestly it's night and day, transformation in him, even physically as well. And you mentioned Colin being really, really good. Liam, in my opinion as well, is absolutely outstanding.
For the last year and a half, when I got to the club first, Liam was actually coming back from a shoulder injury, and to show you his attitude in terms of, he'd use that time to actually physically transform himself, if you know what I mean. He's an absolute beast of a young fella, you know, the type of way. And
that's again, the one thing that surprised me the most, Andy, because I saw him as a young kid, slight, little lad coming up playing with Sligo Rovers, always had the ability. I don't think that was in question, but he was slight. I went out there one of the nights to UCD and I couldn't get over the power of him.
You wouldn't wrestle him, like. You know, he's the absolute bull of Juventus. And he's, like, from the point of view of, he's got himself to a physical condition where actually the transition to UK and stuff like that won't be an issue. Because he's actually, he's quick, he's strong, you know. And again, another unbelievably good lad with a good family behind
him. I've heard great things about him, yeah.
Like, just the first, like, the minute the ball comes out at training, he's straight onto it, first lad out, all that kind of stuff. And just a really good humour, Juventus, all the way through. So, listen, like everything else, you're sorry to lose them. But we know it's time. We know it's his time. And if we were like hanging on to him for 6 months, whatever else like that, he'd actually like he'd flatten out a bit. Like he needs to keep going like that at this stage of his career. So, and hopefully he'll have options. He does have options and good options, which is a good thing to have.
We're seeing a different breed, aren't we? Of young kid come through now. Yeah, I suppose when we were younger, you've characters in the dressing room. We have
characters, but I'll tell you, look, we went out after we went up last year. And like just basic things, like a stupid thing, like, but like half the dressing room don't take a drink.
I was going to say no drink.
The half who do take a drink hardly take a drink, right? So, and I mean, I'm thinking, I was
just Coke and that kind of thing.
And obviously, Coke, exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's better for you as a footballer, but it's
hash or what is it? It does do something else. But,
I was up. We were in Finn Harps the weekend. And we were just saying, like, actually, you know, just across in the Finn Harps' bar, and like I remember when we were 18, 19, yeah, 20. Right? Yeah. Be just from the ground into the bar straight after the game before we get on the bus and all that kind of stuff. Like, so it's a completely different setup. They really look after themselves. They have a much more professional mindset around that element of the game. But there's other elements, I suppose, that, you know, have that probably we had, in terms of you probably got two buses at the bows when you started playing or whatever else it was, or all the other developmental pieces that actually people get picked and carried an awful lot, and there's a bit missing in there. Development for senior football there, right, in terms of decision making and all of that kind of stuff as well. So
tell me as well, Andy, I'm often intrigued when we get a manager in, and now that you're on the topic, I suppose, of the modern day player as such, if that's the phrase you want to use, but particularly with the young lads. And Stewie, when we had Rory Higgins obviously speaking about, again, Rory was the exact same about how well look after themselves and all, and you're not kind of looking out for the things that our managers would have been looking. Word out last night, what were they doing, you know? So that side of it is all perfect, but just when it comes to, and we would have dealt with managers who would have been hardcore and ruthless dressing rooms, in terms of criticism and stuff like that, where's the balance at that now? Because you often hear that they're a bit soft, or they're a bit kind of, if you bark at them too loud, you might lose them. Is there a balance to be met in that regard as well?
Yeah, there's a balance, but I'd be a true believer in the fact of, like, you should be telling the truth at all times, in terms of you shouldn't be plumassing people, you shouldn't be, you know, telling them something that they want to hear that's false, if you know what I mean. There's still the guys in the dressing room who react to a bollocking or a dressing down, whatever it's that. And some guys, you just know from them, is that they shrink into themselves when voices start.
Which is the same with us.
Nothing's changed there.
Nothing's changed. But, and again, it's no different than any other workplace in terms of how you talk to people. But the bit about them, I suppose, is that, like, they're more used now to more information in terms of coaching information, and they expect that, as opposed to they don't expect, even though it happens from time to time, of just somebody going in, if you're playing bad, screaming about playing bad. They want to know about, like, okay, what do we do to stop playing bad here? Yeah. You know, in terms
so you get that thrown back in your face. Like, so if you're not prepared as a coach, you're going to get it. Like,
they're looking for solutions. Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, and in terms of if we're not coming back with something at half time or full time or stuff like that, they'd rightly be saying, like, well, you know, what are you talking about?
Give me information.
Just shouting and ranting. Yeah. Yeah. That's not to say I haven't had a shout and a rant.
Absolutely.
We have all had it, and at times it's called for, but it happens. You know, it happens a fraction of the time. I would imagine you've probably got three of them in the locker a year. Okay. And after that, you're just shouting and roaring.
Okay,
if you know what I mean.
Yeah. And are you picking and choosing the tree?
Yeah, I think you always have to think about, in terms of, sometimes it's because you see something in the group that I think needs to be called out and needs to be called out in a certain way. Other times it's because it's what the game decides. But like I say, that, like, you could use it twice in 2 weeks.
Okay,
and you know, you're going to have to take 20 weeks off here.
Okay, really?
You know, it's like anything else. What you want the delivery be is the consistency of that. And if you're consistently shouting and ranting, you're a shouter and a ranter. That's what you are, you know.
No, it's really interesting. I find that stuff fascinating because, like, as I say, I would be still a bit old school, Andy, in the way we were brought up, and you need a bit of a...
Because
I go to games now, right, every week, and particularly in the lockdown. When
there's your man who wouldn't fucking, like, wouldn't shout or roar at anyone. You used to always go off crying as well.
But the games, particularly in the lockdown where you go and watch games, and sometimes the way that with the crowds are obviously a lot better now, but sometimes you're at them, you don't really hear, like I would have played with you, we'd be fellas barking and roaring and shouting and going after fellas. Now I'm still a little bit for that.
Yeah.
But, and I understand that I can't, I totally understand exactly what you're saying there about picking and choosing and maybe having 2 or 3 rather than 20 rants. But are they a bit too quiet on the pitch as well? Like, do you see fellas going after each other the way...
Our lads are in general. Our lads.
No, not your lads, just in general, I find.
Well, I'd only talk about our lads and things, and absolutely yes, in terms of... And I think that some of that for us just comes with naivety, and I actually don't think they know how to do it yet. I think they think if I'm saying something to Stewie, I don't like Stewie. You know, that's how that's...
Perceived.
So we're non-stop saying to them, it's okay, you'll be friends after the game, but you need to demand a bit more in the game from each other. But I think that takes a little bit of time to develop. And I think if we all think back in our careers, we're probably better at that when we're 29 than when we were 19.
Yeah,
you know,
that totally.
Type of way. So it just takes, and our particular problem is that they're all 19 or 20.
So you don't get them to 29.
Exactly. Like
you bump into them in the bar or something.
You start roaring at you in the bar.
There was a fight, and I'm using air quotes there, in the dressing room, at some point in my tenure and stuff like that, and I can tell you it was not a fight. You know what I'm saying?
Little pat, was it?
Exactly.
You nearly encouraged it. Hit him.
So, yeah.
Brilliant, chat. So, obviously, we mentioned, Andy, the fact that you got your first victory Friday night. Difficult place to go, as everybody knows, Finn Harps. I was up there a couple of weeks back when they played Sligo. Wasn't the best spectacle in the world. So we all know how difficult that can be. Massive victory for you. And I suppose the longer it goes on where you don't have the victory, I was looking back at your results, and I was out there the night you played UCD. The night you played Bowes. Good performance. But you want that win on the board, I suppose. The longer that's going without getting that victory, obviously you're a very level-headed kind of a person anyway, but just how, frustration's probably not the right word, but are you kind of getting to the point where, when are we going to get this feckin' win?
Honestly,
in the games, I feel you've been competitive, bar obviously maybe Shamrock Rovers there, but even the night against Shamrock Rovers, you had your chances in the first.
But the Pats game at home was the bizarrest game I've ever seen.
But if you go through the fixtures, all the scorelines, you're competitive in all the games. Yeah. It's just obviously maybe the Derry one.
Yeah, honestly, I was getting worried, to be honest, because like I said, when we went up, you think, I think another level be fine, you know, whatever. And even against, like you say, you play against Rovers, it could have been 2-0 up against Rovers if our Rovers scored. You go behind against Rovers, it's a completely different game then. And as we worked it through, I think we had a couple of nil all draws, sort of settlers, you know, we get that. Then we'd won or two, we'd a bad loss up and draw it. But we settled, and like, the performances have generally been good. Outside of Derry, where we probably ran out of players in a couple of positions, that just in terms of injuries, and got caught with a Derry playing superb on a particular night. But the Pats week actually was a week where we started off a Sligo away, should have won it. A young player error at the
2-2,
end of the game.
2-2, wasn't it? Yeah,
a young player error at the end of the game caught it. You take that, okay, listen, it's 2-2 against Sligo away, not too bad. I think we played Pats on the Monday. The game had gone, as I said, I'm not sure I could have seen a game going exactly more as how you wanted it to go. You get one look at 20 minutes. Yeah. We were finishing the game quite strong with the players you brought on, all of that kind of stuff. And then you end up losing it.
Yeah, it was never a penalty.
Never a penalty. And a mad OG from
the corner kick. And
then there's a crazy penalty decision on the Friday against Rada. So in terms of, we're looking at a thing there saying, you probably should have had 7 points from this week, and we've ended up with one. And it was one of those where I think that was the week we're thinking, Jesus, you know,
you're getting a bit worried.
Getting worried here, you know. And there's one or two, like, they'll just win one or two games and stuff like that. After 14 games, you're like this is actually going to become a thing. You're hoping it doesn't become a thing in the player's psyche. You're trying to work so it doesn't, so they don't have baggage going out onto the pitch and stuff like that. But it was baggage probably for me and the assistant manager and goalkeeping coach or whatever else. That was, you know, it's going to happen. So, but it did. And listen, the players have been good. Like you said, they've been very, very competitive in all of the games. I think what happens with us in a lot of games is actually sometimes we're devils for turning 1-0s into 3-0s in terms of defeats, in terms of like the Bowes game is probably, I think, after the Derry game, where we actually played quite well, had a fantastic chance to get back to 1-1. Missed it, and then end up 3-0. You know, the type of way. We're well in the game. You know, the type of way. But you know, we sort of we chase it a bit naively, and you know, we let the game. You need, just need to be in the game at 85 minutes as well as 65 minutes. So that's.
But again, that's all part of their development. Absolutely. As well, and absolutely, young kids. Yeah. And in terms of your approach on, every manager has their way of playing and their philosophy. Mm. Again, you're very realistic in how the game. I don't think you want to go out and play false football as such. Yeah, yeah. You mentioned your game management and stuff. Just in terms of how, I suppose, have you changed up your approach in any way, or have you stayed true to yourself throughout even that kind of losing patch or whatever, or not getting the win?
Listen, my philosophy would be, you want to play good football, but you want to play attacking football. And I'm not particularly wedded to the idea of possession, 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 possession. It's just actually, you want to try and keep control of the ball as you're attacking, but you want to try and go forward as quickly as you can, I think, as well, in terms of moving the ball through the towards or whatever else. That doesn't particularly, I think, on formations and stuff like that, is I just think that's player dependent, who's in your group at
your personnel at your disposal,
who's in your group at the particular time. There's times you'll go 4-3-3, there's times you'll do 3-5-2. We like started off for the first year and a half at 3-5-2, probably because of who was there at the club, the players and stuff like that. We thought it too.
I totally agree with that. Systems dictate kind of the personnel that you have at your disposal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You
yeah.
can't be going out playing 4-5-1 if you've lads who kind of don't fit yeah. that system and all.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Like we can play the way we're playing at the moment, for instance, because Colly Whelan is the front man and he does the work of three men every game and stuff like that. And you know, you've got fantastic pace down the side with Liam Kerrigan and Dylan Duffy on the other side and stuff like that. Those guys can, that front three is why you play a front three, if you know what I mean. If you had different players, you might think about playing a two or a different type of system or whatever else like that. So I think that's all player depends. So, but typically, I think, to me, like if it was Klopp or Guardiola, it would be Klopp as opposed to Guardiola. That's the way you do it. Like in terms of, I prefer that type of just exciting type of football rather than
breaking quickly.
Chaos, exactly. That's what you want, absolute chaos. And obviously a big game Friday night against Shamrock Rovers, Andy. You mentioned there about the jump up, and like we can all see it. Stu was obviously in Tala the other night. We all watched the game, the quality that's on show with both those teams. It looks like they've kind of gone to another level compared to the rest. I suppose out of all, and it might be difficult for you to answer this, but out of all the teams, you mentioned there about Derry was superb the night you played, but out of all the teams that you've played against, you've gone through the series of games, who probably has impressed you the most, or where have you kind of thought, wow, like they're a serious outfit?
We played obviously Rovers the first day, and Rovers are good, but it's the first day of the league, and they're probably not up to speed and stuff like that. So I'm hoping not eat me words and say they're twice as good. I've been really impressed with Derry.
Yeah. And
really impressed with Dundalk over the last couple of weeks as well, in terms of how Stevie has them playing now and stuff like that. But Derry, when we were up there, were absolutely top drawer in terms of the movement, the shape. The players are good players within that. But then I think you've really, really, really got to admire Rovers as well, in terms of Rovers have like a particular way of playing, a shape that they play and stuff like that. They've really perfected it.
Yeah,
that really box. Yeah, so say for example you're going out. Well, yeah. I can't actually. You're playing terms.
Don't get caught in the box, as players would say. You'll do a bit of running.
Sorry, I'm only after realising you're playing them terms now, so I won't ask you how you're going to obviously counter playing against the box. But they are obviously very, very strong. Stewie, you were in Tala the other night. We've spoken a lot about Shamrock Rovers. I felt you were a little bit kind of, let me see, too much in the way of, oh, it was Rovers off night, rather than actually praising Derry for them actually being the reason Rovers had an off night. I thought Derry were outstanding.
Derry were excellent, yeah. They were excellent. Without having that sort of
killer instinct.
That killer instinct, yeah, yeah. But they were. I thought there was a, look, I couldn't fault Derry in the first half. Genuinely, man has pulled out a wonderful save. Can't remember if it was Matty Smith, but kind of point blank stuff. But you know, I kind of made the analogy at the end of the game. I think it might have been that, you know, it's kind of like if it was like a boxing match, Derry would have been winning by a halftime points wise by a long shot, and they when you have your opponent up against the ropes, you got to put him on the him on the canvas, like, you know, and they just didn't do that, like, you know, and they did run out of steam then 70 minutes because Rovers just soaked it up. They made a couple of changes, and you could see. I was having a look at McElhenney after about 70 minutes. I think it might have been the Sean Hart chance that he ballooned over the bar, and you could just see McElhenney trying to get, rally the troops, saying we need to tuck in, we need to narrow up now because we're starting to get a bit stretched. We're starting to
and they had put a lot into the previous 70 minutes.
Exactly, they were starting to flag a little bit because exactly they had put an awful lot into that first 70 minutes. Look, I think to be fair, Stephen Bradley said it after the game, and I think the overall opinion of everybody was that Derry were very, very good on the night. Just didn't put the ball in the back of the net. But the it epitomised Rovers champions know how to win games when they're not playing well, and that's where Derry need to get to, you know?
Yeah, 100%, and I agree with that, and they should be praised for that. I think two things on it, and Andy, you can come in on this. Just obviously the squad depth. So you're bringing on Dylan Watts and Danny Mandrew. Them two were two of the best in the league, particularly Mandrew, but Watts is outstanding as well. You're bringing these two on, changing the game, as you said, 20 minutes to go, you're probably flagging, and we've all been in games where you put so much in and you think we're nearly there, and then you look over and the substitute's coming on, you're thinking, ah, here we go again. So these two coming on obviously changed that. Shamrock Rovers should be applauded for, as you say, Stu, despite being under the cosh, hanging in, whatever, and then obviously coming out on top. But the Derry thing, and it's interesting, this, I think both managers, obviously Bradley won't be happy maybe with the way they played, but I think both managers will come out of that really happy, in the sense that for what Shamrock Rovers went through and to come out on top, of course Bradley will be happy with that. But I think Rory Higgins, just to show, because I still think, even though we're all pitting them as kind of contenders, and they are absolutely contenders, they're still probably, this is their first full year. It's taken Bradley to 4 years to build them. So if you've no Patrick McElhenney, no Duffy, or star players that you sign, and to still go to Tala, play the way they played, didn't change their approach, went and took the game to them, they're just short, obviously, those three players that normally come to the stage where 70 minutes, rather than Mandry and Watts coming on, Derry are looking over having a really good, strong 11, and now we can bring on Duffy, or now we can bring on or whoever. So they're still just that little bit short in that regard. But in terms of going forward, I think Rory Higgins will be over the moon at where they're at.
Well, you mentioned the movement, didn't you? Because that's one thing that stood out for me, is the movement of the front three, Matty Smith, I think Dunnigan and McGonagall. Yeah, I mean they had Hoare, Lopez, and Gannon all over the place. They were just, because it's all stuff happening off the ball. You can't see it on the camera, but when you're at the game, you can see it. And I'm just glued to these three, and they're switching. They're constantly staying up forward, giving them an absolute headache. Yeah.
You know, one who stood out for me, Stu, actually, and a very similar to yourself, Thompson. He was just the runs non-stop. Yeah. He was, because obviously the technical fellas get all the kind of the praise or whatever, but his energy levels and the runs, the problems he was causing them in that first half, particularly down that left hand side channel, as you say, where Finn might have been pushing on and there was a big gap between Finn and Gannon there, I thought he was brilliant, Thompson.
Yeah, no, I agree. Couldn't disagree. I did think Rovers were flat in the first half. There was definitely something not right. I don't know whether there was something, maybe the preparation that week didn't go well. They might have done a session too long, or maybe they didn't do train after they played on the Monday. I don't know, but something was a little bit off. Like, you know,
well, Andy's hoping they'll be off Thursday night. Isn't it?
Yeah, well, it doesn't bode well for you, Andy, because I imagine, have you got front three that can run ragged? They can run Hoare, Lopez, and Gannon ragged.
We have a front three. But,
just tell them to run.
Listen, the difficult, I think where Rovers get you most of all, it's no, like, even in terms of, I think where for Derry, like, you're probably right in terms of, it takes a couple of years for a group, and we all managers and coaches will find out with a group in terms of you should be improving over time, whatever. I think where Rovers are in their type of formation, and they've just been at this for quite a while. They're adding in guys now who are really improving, the likes of Andy Lyons and stuff like that.
And they're only adding one or two each year. Yeah, exactly. That's massive. And to be fair to Derry, Andy, as well, the fact that they're handing out the long-term contracts, the building has started. So them bricks are laid, Stu. Them fellas are staying there. And then you're just topping up with another one. And that's where you need to get to, really, isn't it?
And like lots of, you hear that word used all the time now in terms of teams having to suffer against other teams. Like, that's what you have to do against Rovers from the point of view of, they'll have more possession, and probably considerably more possession than most teams in the league. Like, even in terms of Rovers played a third or fourth team in the league, they'll have a lot more possession than them. So you're going to run, and you're going to get to 70 minutes, and everybody's going to start getting tired. And like you said, then gaps will start appearing. So I think the hardest part with Rovers at the moment is staying with them, because then, like you say, it could be any three that they bring on. And they can change the whole front three, bring another front three on, a whole new midfield. And actually, all you've got is the same quality with more legs, and you're still trying to chase it, you know, the type of way. So they're really difficult to play against, and really impressive. from where they are.
I just from what I seen the other night, I think Derry are going to stick with them.
Do you think they can sustain it for
Derry,
years?
Derry have played Pats three times now, and they've taken 7 from 9 points.
And they should have bet them. They should have taken 9 because they battered them.
Rovers have to play Pats three more times. Like, so it's little things like that. You kind of look and you go, do you know what? You know, it's we're not done with yet. But I will say one thing. I'm very much looking forward to seeing both sides now in Europe, because I think both of them can do extremely well.
Exactly. Mm.
Extremely well.
I think you're right. I think Derry will stay the course in terms of having a challenge and stuff like that. Absolutely. Because they're really good. Both sides, as I said, really well coached and have that tactical nous and all that kind of stuff that you need in Europe. And have the players as well that can, and enough of a squad that can probably go both ways, you know, when you're playing Thursday, Sundays, that type of stuff as well. So be really interesting and really, you know, should actually be really interesting to look at them in Europe now this year.
So just, Andy, I suppose to finish up, you've been great with your time. The plans in terms of UCD, that model, like people will ask, the league is moving on as such, you know, in terms of, you were obviously speaking about Shamrock Rovers Derry, but also there's plans for grounds being redeveloped and we want... The debate that's been raging over the last 2-3 years is you want an industry here and will they all go full time? Obviously there's clubs against that, but is there a place, I suppose, for the UCD thing?
I mean, from my, I was, somebody asked me about this a while ago, and to me it's just around sporting integrity, right? We had the argument a couple of months ago about the Super League and how we didn't want teams that had loads of money, you know, just winning everything and keeping everything for themselves and, you know, for instance, last like a Villarreal can't get into that scene. They're going to always be down here or wherever else it is. Or Rovers won't get in because they're not big enough and all this kind of stuff. Like, sport has to be worked out in terms of what happens on the pitch. That's just for me. So it's the reason why Bournemouth are in the Premiership. It's the reason why we're in the Premier Division of the League of Ireland. Is that, like, if we can get a set of players to do enough to get us into the Premier, fine. That's it. That's what sport's about. It can become about money and resources and big crowds and television and all if people want, but I won't be watching it if that's what it's about. In terms of, if it's Real Madrid versus Bayern Munich every week, I don't know. That's not where I think people get into. I'm always taking that quote at that Spurs usually have around the ground in terms of the game is about glory. That's what it's about at all levels of the game, in terms of you need those moments in the game for weird things and brilliant things to happen. And I think once we go down that route of saying, like, well, UCD shouldn't be in it because their crowd isn't big enough or they don't have something else. If they've had a squad of players who've been good enough to accumulate enough points to get into a league, fine. That's all that it's about. If you beat enough teams in the cup, you win the cup. If you win enough games in the league,
I'd wholeheartedly agree. As I said, I'd always defend UCD. And maybe, look, it's because of my own experience there or whatever. But I think the only thing they would beat UCD with is the crowd and maybe the facility, the ground. Nobody could ever make the argument in terms of the football side of things. And even when I left UCD, and you might go back to play against them, did you ever go out to UCD and have an easy game?
No, and I tell you what, I actually used to really enjoy playing against UCD. I used to love playing out in the old Belfield. Pitch was always really good, and it was just something, just really enjoyed. So like, and then when they moved, I think there was 1 year where there was, I think it was the first year they moved, they were playing rugby on it and the pitch was awful. Yeah. But then what always catches me about UCD is that there's so much room for expansion there. You know, and then even like the world is evolving. I don't recognise the world now as opposed to when we played. It's a totally different world. So, you know, and
Stewie's deep.
We brought up this whole idea of footballers, you know, being able to play and to also go down an academic route. Absolutely no reason why they can't do it. The days of players training in the morning and then going to Nando's for the afternoon.
You're thinking of Nando's.
Is gone and should never be around anyway. Like, you know, so there's definitely the scope there for the likes of UCD to capitalise on. And there's also the college system in America.
I think the college system in America, where that falls down, is actually you don't get to play enough football, right? Because the season's very short. But the thing I'd say about it as well is that, like, I'll get deep now myself in a minute in terms of some of the societal stuff. Rugby players do it.
Yeah.
Rugby players play rugby. Guys playing for Ireland.
And study.
Yeah.
Leinster,
and make sure they're at the end. There is actually no better occupation to combine study with than sport. You've got a heck, as we all know, like, you'll train and whatever, there's a heck of a lot of free time. Mm. So like that, if you can actually combine it with sport. Now, but there's all types of other reasons in terms of why rugby players do it and soccer players don't. But
it's a cultural thing.
Cultural
Andy,
thing,
yeah.
Absolutely. It's a societal thing. It's a class thing. It's all those
right,
things.
Right,
so.
It is,
well,
yeah.
Well, we had one of the brightest boys that we had in here on the podcast was Georgie Kelly. Mm. He's still continuing his masters whilst over in Rotherham, and yeah. he says UCD have obviously been fantastic to him in that regard. But he followed on Robbie Benson, one of the most intelligent footballers on the pitch and off the pitch. Mm. So the proof is there in the pudding, especially for parents listening to this, if there is any, in terms of young kids. The whole education thing is so, so important. And it, as you said, Andy, the amount of hours that you have in the day after obviously you finish your training in the morning or whatever to get your qualifications to do whatever you want. Yeah. There has to be room for that in this.
Oh, completely, because the culture's changed. Mm. I mean, the reality is this: when we played, you would have got stick for studying.
Yeah.
You would have been called a nerd, a weirdo, whatever. And you know, but now it's completely flipped. It's totally flipped, whereby it's nearly almost, well, why aren't you doing something? Yeah, you should be doing something. Yeah. Like, you know, you need to think about this. I remember, Jesus God help me, 10 years ago, I had to go in to talk to some of the Rovers players for a PFAI thing. Some of the kids were coming up after me. Like, I won't say who they were. They hadn't got a leaving cert.
Yeah. Mm.
And I genuinely looked at this fella and went, oh my God. And I just looked, I just tried to convince him to do this or to do that. But I mean.
Listen, you hope that the Brexit rule and all that kind of stuff that keeps youngsters here sorts out some of the leaving cert stuff and keeps guys in towards education a little bit longer and all of that kind of stuff. But I think, like I said earlier, I think the worm is turning a small bit in terms of who's looking at those type of routes now. And hopefully it will, because like I say, other sports do. Like, if you went out to UCD, it's not only football and rugby and stuff like that, but you know we've got canoeists and sailors and, you know, golfers and everything else that are looking at combining those things, and there's sports that do it actually really well and realise that actually not only like is it a good idea, but you actually should be doing it. Mm. You should actually be doing it. You should be combining these aspects of your life, and it doesn't matter.
They're the normal ones.
If you're a full time footballer at any club in this country, you probably should have a degree on the go as well, just while you can. Mm. If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Last question, Andy. Maybe 2 weeks ago, you mentioned there obviously the run of games, and you're thinking you were getting worried. People were suggesting you're doomed. You're looking at the table now. There's light there when you look at obviously closer to Finn Harps, closer to Drogheda. How hopeful maybe are you of pushing them all the way and believing that you can stay in the Premier?
Listen, a bit like the sporting thing, I think if you don't think you can, you should just give it up, really. Mm. So, I mean, I actually think, I think absolutely we can. We've got a group of players that will be good enough to at least challenge and keep performing at the level that we're performing. Like I say, we lose one or two of the better guys, fine. Club have done that before. We bring another young guy in. It's up to us then, in terms of management and coaches and stuff like that, to try and find a new if we need a new formation, if we need those bits. But listen, I'm not taking that for granted. The teams above us are decent sides as well, but we will absolutely keep on chasing as hard as we can in terms of trying to keep the club in the Premier Division. It's a great goal to have, apart from anything else, in terms of setting young lads. This is something we're trying to do. If we don't do it, we don't do it. Won't be for the want of trying. But I think we're hopeful.
See, in terms, sorry, now I said it was the last question, but now you're after, and this is an important one. See, in terms of their development, right, and you said that's the sole focus, right? I think they will learn more from this season than what they did last year.
Well, oh yeah, actually, as I said, I had a chat with Colly Whelan this morning, and Colly's hold-up play, for instance, is off the charts better than it was in the previous two seasons, right, where he didn't particularly have to hold the ball up. Mm. He could get the ball, he'd score goals, he'd do all that kind of stuff. And actually, used to be
coming from the master at
have conversations with him to say, listen, you won't believe me, but like, you know, the thing you did there, you actually shouldn't. I know it ended up in the goal, but actually, when you go up the levels, you shouldn't do that. You need to do this and that and the other. And actually, he didn't score a goal for the first 10 games, I think, but his hold up play came on an absolute bomb. And you can see other lads, Evan Caffrey, under 19 international, how his game has come on. You see Limo's game, how that's come on in terms of and guys that are in our defence, young guy Eric Yoro, once they came over 19s, in terms of the development speed they have once they're playing games at that level,
against
fantastic.
Better players. Yeah.
No, absolutely fantastic.
And that's what I find, and it's only football people that will realise that, because people would have looked at Colin Whelan at the start, right, banging in goals left, right and centre. As you see, he doesn't score for 10. People are judging him on that. Mm. But you're actually saying his game is developing far better than just scoring a goal.
Yeah. He's already a miles better player than he was.
I totally get that. But people wouldn't realise that. People go, you know, just, and again, no disrespect, just fans and punters. Yeah. But people, I think this year will stand them in such good stead going forward, whether they stay up, whether they don't, compares to maybe what they were doing last year.
100%. So, like, there's learning in the fourth division, absolutely. There's another period of learning, another level of learning in the Premier Division.
And even for yourself, you're probably learning.
Oh, yeah. Listen, absolutely. Like I said about the three boys, you are up against better coaches, managers, right throughout and stuff like that. That's not to disparage anybody in the fourth division who have good coaches and managers and guys who've managed that Premier Division level and all that kind of stuff as well. But everything goes up a level.
Yeah.
Everything goes up a level. So we're all in that. So, like, first time I've managed in the Premier Division. So I hope I'm a better manager than I was 14 games ago. Some of the lads might tell you different, but you hope you are. So it's just a different challenge. It's like anything else in life. You know, if you've stepped up a level in anything.
Who's in that WhatsApp group of yours?
You know some of these lads.
Tell me a few names.
Gary.
Damo Lynch.
Yeah, is he? Yeah,
Damo, right. Ado, Tony Mark.
Ado? It's a very intelligent group.
Yeah.
I stand by my 99%.
Former students. Students till they die.
I keep it real though. What you call it? A group of ex. I'm going to slag them now. A group of ex Drogheda players. Probably the group that got there before you. Right.
The real successful Drogheda ones. The ones that kept the club alive. That didn't kill it.
Yeah. I tell you what, those lads for foregone money so everybody else could have $2,000 every week. You know?
Andy, it's been an absolute pleasure. We really appreciate you coming in. One of the good guys. Hopefully, we'll be watching on. Hopefully, things do work out for you and you stay up. But if not, I've no doubt the lads, as I say, the experience that they're getting and yourself as well, you'll be just fine. Stewie, as always, thanks a million.
Cheers, Alan, yeah.
Big thanks to Paul, obviously looking after everything out there. And Benetti Menswear, our sponsor. That's it for episode 12, I think it is. We'll be back next week and I'll be out in UCD roaring on the students on Thursday night.
Man out.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to Cawley's Call, powered by Benetti Menswear. For more interviews like this, please subscribe to my podcast or follow on all my social media channels.